Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life.
Good day, listener.
Welcome, one and all.
That's Ben. I'm Matt, and you are back with the sweet alto sounds of my voice. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was a younger man, I don't know if I ever told you this, it was like 50-50 that I would get called ma'am in drive-thrus.
Yeah. Yeah, you've mentioned that.
Have I mentioned
something
that?
Something about your voice.
But now I'm older. Right. And I don't know. It's a little
you've
more
hit puberty.
I think puberty's finally coming, folks. Mm-hmm. It's interesting happening. To go through that with your kids, but here I am.
It's not they don't write books about how to do that. So it's unusual. Well, here we are. Yet another episode. This is, who's counting besides us, but it is episode number 400. I can't find it. 409, episode 409 of the Gravity Commons podcast. We did find out, you know, several, when we did episode 400, I think it was, we sort of, we had a little celebration, a mini celebration. And we asked people if they had listened to all episodes, and I didn't really think that anybody would have. And we ended up finding out one person emailed us, but then like after that, several more have emailed us and said, I've listened to all the episodes. So, what an incredible, run. It's one thing to record a podcast because, you know, you're the host of the podcast. You need to be on these podcasts, but that's another thing to listen to all of them. I think that's, impressive. Apparently people are finding it helpful. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. I, some people may say that we could have done with a few less, you know, there's some stinkers in there.
Well, you're going to publish every week. There's going to be a few, you got to, what's the phrase? You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Something like that. So, 100% of the podcasts you don't make are not going to be good. but if you make them, some percentage will be bad. Will be bad. They'll be bad.
You miss every podcast you don't shoot.
You miss every podcast you don't shoot. You miss 100% of the podcasts you never listen to. Something like that. I'm pretty sure in there somewhere is a very wise saying. very wise. Anyway, but yeah, we just committed to doing this every week, and we have so far.
Yeah, here we are. So,
yeah. Matt, you're taking a trip. I'd like to hear about.
Would you like to hear about it?
Yeah, I just heard. You just told me, you know, yesterday that you're going to be gone next week, and I've got to do all the work around here. And I'm like, dang it! No, I'm kidding. We've known about this trip for a while, but tell the beloved listener what you're going to be up to.
Yeah, every 2 years, I take a trip out west with some college friends to go backpacking. And the previous 4 times we've done this, we started in 2017. We went to Yosemite because there's so much to see in Yosemite. Mm-hmm. And this time, the last time we actually went to Great Sequoia, the Sequoia National Park. But this time we're going to the Grand Tetons in Wyoming. And whenever I tell people that, there is a lot of excitement. People who've been to the Grand Tetons really like it.
Yeah, that's great. And you've come back every time so far. You've not died. Nobody in your party has died. So that's a good one.
Last trip was really difficult, physically challenging, some physical peril. This trip, even though I have lots of trepidation about it, should be less perilous. Last trip was 72 miles and 6 days or something. Mm. And this trip is like 51 miles and 5 days.
Hmm.
Maybe 47 miles and 5 days. I don't know. It's much easier.
Much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we got to pick up some, we got to pick up some bear spray for the first time.
Yeah. There are bears in these woods.
There are. And typically, if there's just black bears, you don't need bear spray. But apparently in the Grand Tetons, there's grizzlies.
Yeah. They can be, from what I've heard, a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah. They get ornery.
Yeah.
So going to get some bear spray and just make a lot of noise.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't like that.
As you walk. You know, I make a lot of noise on this podcast and in general.
You're probably safe from
bears. So it shouldn't
be
hard for me. Yeah. I'm training.
Yeah.
My bear safety, Ben. Uh-huh. That's why I won't shut up.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I feel similar to a bear in some ways with that description. Where I can get aggressive, but if you're making a lot of noise, I'm probably just not going to bother.
Right.
You just scamper away.
Ugh,
I got to get out of here. I like my peace and quiet.
Unless, much like a grizzly, unless I'm threatening one of your children.
Right.
Then you'll bone up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even if you are making a lot of noise, I'll be like, well, I probably need to take care of this thing.
Yeah, I need to get in here. I need to get in there.
Whatever. Whatever's going on here, I need to protect my children. Protect my cubs from this threat, this noisy, odd threat. Anyway.
Who is this odd person threatening
my
children?
What in the world is going on right now? I mean, should probably deal with this.
He thinks he's threatening.
He thinks he's threatening.
I probably should do something, but he's more silly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's being silly, but the kids are scared. And so...
Yeah, so I'm really excited. I'm just a little nervous. A little nervous about it, you know?
Yeah, just being in the wilderness. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I'm worried a little bit about my overall... I don't want to say health, you know? But, you know, am I up to it? It's taxing, right?
Yeah, it's taxing. Yeah, well, I know what you're talking about. Like when I was a younger man, I never thought about things like that. And I was like, I'll handle it. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But as I approach 50 now, I'm like, can't, you know, what pace do I need to do this now at? You know?
Yeah. I'm at the stage of life where I wake up and I've pulled something in my sleep or I take a step down the stairs and my ankle feels like I need a cast on it. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm at that age where things just start falling apart.
Yeah, randomly.
And, you know, being in the middle of the wilderness away from lots of people at 9,000 feet, it's with 45 pounds on your back. It's a bad time for things to fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Traditionally.
You don't want your ankle to just crumble.
No.
You know, one morning. That won't be any good. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I thought you were going to say that you were really worried about how I was going to do while you're gone. But you know, that's fine too, to worry about your body falling apart.
Well, I'm more excited than scared.
Good.
Well, I'm way more excited than scared. These are some of my favorite people in the world. Mm-hmm. I enjoy being outside in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. It really is rejuvenating for me. I know a lot of listeners feel the same way. It's like, yeah, some people like to go to an old church, or some people like to, you know, go to the beach. And I like the beach, but there's nothing like being somewhere that I couldn't be unless I'd walk 2 days to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I like wilderness, and I like mountains especially.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Mountains more than beach.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm doing that.
Well, good.
When you're listening to this, maybe on this podcast, I'll be gone that week. So.
Yes. Yes. So Matt leaves.
Hopefully, this podcast gets out. You know, I usually take care of all that.
Sure, so. Yeah, you make sure you take care of all the details really around here, and so I'm hoping. Good thing. Good thing we've got our new admin at the helm. Yeah.
Yep. Well.
Let's get into today's episode. Who are we talking to today, Matt?
Unfortunately, he's not coming on this hike with me. We are talking today with my friend, and now our friend, Will Harrison Jr. He and I met on Facebook and have become long distance friends. We've actually interviewed a number of people on our podcast that we've just met on the highways and byways, hither and thither, as they say.
On the internet?
Yeah, and on the internet, or, you know, in person. But today we're talking to Will Harrison Jr. about disability justice and the church. And he's a licensed clinical social worker. He's lived with a rare disability that impacts his speech all his life. And he has been married with 6 kids. He enjoys hiking, reading, and of course, coffee.
Of course, coffee.
Over the past few years, Will has been working through what it looks like to be a post-evangelical, navigating faith and reality. Mm. And I'm really excited to bring you this conversation with Will today.
All right, here we go.
Will Harrison Jr., welcome to the Gravity Commons podcast.
Thanks a lot, guys. Good to be here.
Will and I are friends from social media, right, Will? We met on Facebook?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Will is currently a social worker, and he and I have a friendship around things like deconstruction and disability justice. Well, we're going to talk about your story a little bit, but first of all, would you tell us a little bit about your disability, the name of it, and how it impacts you?
I have a rare disability called Möbius syndrome. Möbius affects roughly, it's a rare disability, so it affects the rough estimate, only a couple thousand people worldwide. So Möbius, for me, is different as a person. The general defects are I cannot make any facial expressions, so I don't have any control over my facial nerves, can't smile, can't frown. It also affects my speech because I don't have full lip closure, so certain letters are hard for me to pronounce. It also affects my hearing, my eyesight, but it's different as a person. Some people have grown with without certain limbs. Some people, it's more severe. So it's kind of a wide range of how it affects people.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit of your story. I know you grew up in a Southern Baptist church. And what was it like growing up in the Southern Baptist church, not only from a faith perspective for you, but also, you know, having a rare disability? How was that for you?
I think the best way to describe it looking back now is that I grew up in a silo. I grew up in a very protected space, rural community in South Carolina. where all I knew was the world around me. So that was going to church 3 times a week, going to church for revival, going to church for the youth event. Church was my whole world, so that affected my worldview in every single way possible. It was my lifeline. It was my escape from the outside world. I was a stepdad who was an alcoholic. So when I said it was my everything, it was my everything.
You know, Will, our paths, while I just met you actually today, our paths have crossed in the sense of the school that I went to is a school that you went to several years later. And you majored in youth ministry, and it seems as though your disability was seen by people and it caused people to not hire you. I wonder, can you talk about that just a little bit? And then it kind of maybe spiraled into bigger deconstruction. And I wonder if you could double click on that a little.
Yeah. I graduated from Columbia International University in 2004. When I was in high school, when it came time to picking a career, the one thing that impacted the most was my youth leader, who was very impactful in my life. And so I decided to be a youth pastor. And so I applied and got accepted. And Columbia was a really small school. I think the undergrad was about 500. So it was a very small space. So I knew my cohort. I had the same professors. It was a very tight-knit community. When I graduated, well, let me back up. I've always had a love of culture. So in Bible college, I went on several mission trips. So when I graduated, I found out about this opportunity in Atlanta with this organization that does youth ministry cross-culturally. They train youth pastors overseas. And to me, that was an absolute dream job because it took my love of Jesus and my love of culture and combined those two. Well, when I went into the interview, the first interview was pretty standard. But I didn't hear back for a while. And when I called them, the guy said to me, "We're not going to hire you because we don't think people can understand you."
Oh, man.
And he said, we think you'll do better if you were in a church setting. And me being naive and me being, you know, these are obviously good Christian leaders that pray about everything, I didn't think about it at the time. I'm like, okay, great, I'll go and do a youth, you know, do an internship. And so I ended up going out to Colorado and unfortunately, that ended on kind of all the same lines. I got out there 3 months later. They just ended the internship with really no defining reason as to why. So I moved back home to South Carolina, just really in a depressive state. And I don't think my deconstruction started then. I think I saw the cracks, but I don't think I knew enough to start understanding where those cracks were coming from.
Yeah, yeah. It's when I hear you share that, I think I hear you kind of saying you didn't even maybe have a box for somebody saying something like that to you. Your heart was like, I want to be a youth minister. I want to go to another country. I want to love kids and love God. And there was just not even a box for people saying that they saw you as a disability rather than as the person. And I guess I just want to say I'm sorry. I'm sorry that that is part of your story.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's important, though, to recognize that it's not unique either, right? Well, like your story is particular to you, but this is something common, I think, in spaces that are more monocultural spaces, right? Where we don't understand necessarily our biases or how inhospitable we can be to people who are different than us. I wonder, maybe taking up the story from there, how did you decide or what went into your process then of shifting your vocation from the church to a more professional setting?
So I never actually ever got a job in youth ministry. So eventually, I had to write for my community, so I had to put that on the back burner. And I ended up working as a housekeeper custodian at a retirement home for about 8 years. And then we moved, and I stayed kind of in that role at different places for another couple of years. And we just weren't making ends meet. I mean, it was just a struggle financially. But what made the shift to where I'm at now, we had several kids who were dealing with medical needs. And in 2014, my daughter was born. And right when she was born, we knew that there was some... We knew there was some stuff going on, and she ended up getting moved to ICU, and she came home with all these monitors and equipment we had to use, and it really changed our whole world. And a year later, she had her cleft palate repaired, and which is a very routine surgery because a cleft palate is one of the most common birth defects. And when I talked to her surgeon later, you know, she's done hundreds, if not thousands, of these surgeries. And the way it happened, after surgery, she had some major complications where her oxygen level was just, it kept dropping. And so they ended up rushing her back into surgery. And she ended up being in ICU on a vent for a week. And it was really during that week where I knew, like, first of all, I knew the horror and tragedy of what we were dealing with as parents. But I'm like, you know, this is where I need to be. Like, I need to be healed hurting people. Mm. And a couple of months later, I was meeting with a friend for dinner. She said, Will, you need to do social work. Social work had never crossed my mind in like 30 plus years. Never. And I was driving home that night, and I told my wife, I said, I'm going into social work. I'm a 37-year-old guy, and you know, I applied for grad school, got accepted, and continued down that road to where I'm now a licensed clinical social worker in Michigan.
So then, obviously, you still have your disability.
Yeah.
How has that impacted you in getting a job in social work? And how has that been different than it was in the church?
You know, Nat, I say this with complete honesty, and I know people are going to hear this and kind of dismiss it, but I say this with experience. I have never experienced in the quote-unquote secular world what I've experienced inside the church. Like, in every job I've had, my disability has never, ever, ever been an issue. It's never been an issue. Like, people accept me for me, and people would ask questions, stuff like that, which I encourage. I don't mind at all. But it's never been an issue at all. I mean, I can't think of one time where my disability has been an issue with the job I've had.
I mean, how does that... How do you make sense of that, Will? How do you make sense of the difference?
I think for most people who are Christians, most people who are evangelical Christians, when you clarify, they are raised and they grow up inside this bubble where everything they see, they hear, and experience confirms who they are. So they're never faced with differing opinions. And when it comes to disability, people don't know what to do. When we had our daughter, I don't remember anyone who really went with us through that whole journey. I mean, people just scattered. And I don't think evangelicals know how to embrace are certainly uncomfortableness of life. I think that's part of it. I also think that the other issue is that when it comes to disability, we limit God to what he can do. A couple of years ago, I was attending a church here in town, actually, and I thought, you know, I should get involved with the Eucharist and advertise they needed someone to teach. And so I met with the pastor, and he said, you know, I think you'd be better off doing the camera. I think it was a teaching volunteer position with the kids in this thing. And he said, I think you'd be better off doing video camera. And I did that for a while until I realized this isn't who I am. And even when he said, you know, because I've always wanted to share my story, but unfortunately, most churches have always been resistant to that. But he said, well, you know, we could plan a time for you to speak, and then you will put the words on the screen so people can understand you. And there was no language for what works for you. So I think for most people, they don't even realize there's an issue. You know, it doesn't even faze them. Because it's not a world they have to interact with. They don't have to interact with the disability world.
Hmm. And now, a word from a sponsor.
The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, our 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn how to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life that God shares with us. It is a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying out some new practices. In the Gravity Formation Course, we go below the surface of our lives so that we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence and to discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us toward holistic flourishing, more transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people from all over the world in this formation framework, and it's helped many people to have a sense of God at work in their lives and learn to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation.
All right, let's get back into our conversation.
So one of the things I hear you saying is that, like, definitely in like the SBC world you grew up in and the more maybe provincial Christian pockets, there's a lot of homogeneity and there's not much difference. And so when confronted with difference, there's kind of this incompatibility that's just sort of assumed. Like, yeah, we don't know how to integrate this.
I will say this, though. When I was a teen, I did go around to different churches sharing my story. But looking at it now, I think the issue with that was that I was kind of put on this pedestal of, oh, here's someone who has a disability as a Christian. I was never taught at all how to sit with a disability, because growing up, you know, even so, praise God and everything, right? So only in the past couple of years have I given myself permission to say, you know what? There's parts of this I don't like. Because I didn't even use the teen. I would share my story and say, well, you know, if God came back and said, hey, I'll take a disability away, would I let him? And I was like, yeah, I will, because it's the way I trust God. You know, that's the way I trust God. But if someone would ask me that now, of course I want clear speech. I mean, yeah, I would love to be understood by everybody. You know, it doesn't change the fact that I don't dislike who I am. But yeah, I'd love to have clear speech. So I think there's this idea that we can't ask questions. We just have to give God the praise and everything. And so, again, people don't know how to wrestle with different ideas.
Yeah, and something else about this too is, I've seen this, like, we're happy to, in general, in these kinds of monolithic cultures, monocultures, the outliers or the people who are different can be put on a platform to share a testimony that is extraordinary, right? But yes. they can never move into a recognized leadership position where they have influence and authority. They can never be ordinary.
Oh my gosh, I've never thought of it that way. That's deep. Yeah,
but it makes sense. But well, it's the same. I mean, my mind's going in a million directions here. But like difference is fetishized, right? Yeah. So during the colonial period, people from Africa we brought back into Europe or America and taken on tours, and people would, you know, treat them as exotic figures. But that didn't, and so you maybe if you looked at their face, you would think, wow, look how much they appreciate this person, look how much they honor this person. But there's a distance there. There's an exoticness that they're sort of consuming the how exotic they are, but there's never any acceptance or accommodation to them or a welcome or a joining with them so that who they are becomes part of who we are. And I hear that that's maybe tracks with some of your story too.
Yeah, it definitely does.
So then... How does your faith journey tie into this? Because I know that, you know, you were raised in kind of a fundamentalist sort of conservative church. And then you've referenced a couple times kind of moving through like a questioning of your faith or a deconstruction period. Could you share more about that?
Yeah. I really think the wheels started to spin in grad school. My first class in grad school was on diversity, and it exposed me to so many different things I never knew before. For example, I never knew the police brutality existed. So I remember calling a friend, and I said, "Does this happen?" She goes, "Yes, it happens." I'd never been exposed to that. And so during COVID was when I think I finally realized I couldn't be evangelical anymore. And just began to question everything from, you know, the doctrine of hell, the doctrine of sin. But I think the catalyst for me, the day that I realized that something was inherently wrong, was the murder of George Floyd. Because I saw Christians I knew who I grew up with respond in such a negative way to his death. I'm like, what is going on? And what I realized, what I put together the last couple of years, what happens is that most evangelicals only see sin as an individualistic thing, my sin. But we can't understand the greater sin to society, like racism and homophobia and those things that really weigh into how people experience life. And I think that was when everything just came crashing down at once. As to where I'm at now, that's a good question. I would say that if I would have been raised with theologians like James Cone and just now discovering Walter Brueggemann and liberation theology, those ideas, I don't know if there would have been a big deconstruction, because those ideologies really helped me understand how faith acts in the world. But I was raised in a box. And so as of right now, I would say that on most days I'm agnostic, you know. It's one of those things where I don't want to let go of Jesus. Like, I want my faith to be a important part of my life. Now, I'm not ready to say I want to be an atheist at all. But then, Christy, I struggle with, how do I find that? How do I find the faith that isn't evangelical? How do I find the faith that will include my gay brother who in my time of crisis wrote to me and said, "I'm going to pray for you"? my friend, literally, she sent me a text. She said, "Will, I'll pray for you." But yet, according to an evangelical, she's not a Christian. And so, how does all that play out? And so what does faith look like now? And I would say for me, still very much a messy process.
I appreciate your honesty. Sometimes in these settings, we feel like we need to wrap it up with a vintage bow. And I say vintage because it's like means it's in the past. Like I figured it out and now I can tell the happy clappy story. But the reality is like many of us and our listeners, there is an entanglement of questions and frustration and hurt and pain and that we have to dissect and untangle and be honest about. And so I appreciate you being honest about where you are. I wonder if we can hear from you about, like, in your opinion, the importance of, you know, DEI in church and community. And just, I'd love to hear more of your thoughts on that.
Yeah. First of all, let's say what DEI is. I think a lot of people say they're anti-DEI. They don't even know what DEI is. DEI is diversity, equity, and inclusion. So let's break that down a little bit. So diversity is excluding all people that aren't like us and accepting that that's good. It's a good thing. And it is. Equity is really giving everyone the same playing field to work with. So basically, it's giving other people a leg up, you know, so they can succeed in life. And then inclusion is including people that aren't like us. And when it comes to the church, I'm not surprised that most evangelicals are anti-DEI because, for one, they don't understand what it is, but two, their worldview has no room for that. Like, even though scripture will say, you know, it will describe different people and characters in all walks of life and culture, there's no room for what that looks like in evangelical spaces. But the most important thing is how does DEI affect the need? Because I think we can talk in broad terms, but what does it look like personally? So, for me, personally, I am a clinical social worker. So what that means is I've done my master's program. I've done all the hours I needed to take my license exam. I took my license exam with the national exam and I passed it. So I'm now a full clinically licensed social worker. So let's say that I'm interviewing for a job and this job has no candidates. So let's say you got, you know, Sally, Mark, and me. And so what DEI does is it helps a person say, well, it helps us recognize our biases, because we all have biases. So it doesn't mean that you hire incompetent people. I hear that all the time. Well, if they were the right person for the job, they would hire than anyone. No, that's not true. Because think about this. If you have in your mind what a physician and that person in that position used to look like, and you hire three people, but that one of them is different, it's a speech issue, are you going to hire them? People would say yes, but most of us wouldn't, because it makes us feel uncomfortable. So when I interview for a physician, I have to work twice as hard because to prove myself, because and then when I get done with the interview, because we all go through jobs we don't get, I have to ask myself a question, well, did they not hire me because they found someone better? Or did they not hire me because of my disability? And that's something I'll never know. But you look at inclusion in schools. You look at all these programs in schools that have that help kids out. You know, you look at how you have, you walk into a building and you have Accessibility is DEI, 100%. You know, so when your grandmother is going to the airport and needs a wheelchair, that's DEI. That's inclusion. It's including the things people need to be successful.
Yeah, I think there's a common misconception that I appreciate you speaking to, which is the way DEI works is there's three qualified candidates who don't have a speech disability, and Will is a less qualified candidate with a speech disability, and Will gets the job instead of them.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the common trope, right?
It is, and I think that it's a big gross misunderstanding, because obviously you want to hire the best person. So I think the bottom line is we limit what people can do. In our minds, we think we know what people can and can't do. And that's just not okay. So when I think of removing DEI programs at schools, you know, I don't know if you've seen this, but currently the administration is wanting schools to do DEI. That sounds new to no end, because I work with programs that have really supported parents in the IEP process, which is good, if using, you know, accommodations for kids in classrooms. So if you take the DEI, it doesn't erode those supports that kids have in schools, like IEPs. The administration says no, but once you go down that road, you make anything possible. Right now, a lot of kids are in, some kids are pulled out in special classes to help them, but more kids are pushing into classes. So they're being more integrated. So when we look at the importance of DEI, we think to be inside DEI, really in nine ways, is to be inside Jesus. I don't know if you could be inside DEI and be pro-Jesus. I just don't think the values line up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's one of the hallmarks of Jesus's ministry is sort of the audacious diversity of the people who followed him, and how he included people that were excluded, and he sought equity among people who experienced systemic inequity. And
let me go back to an earlier point. One, DEI it's not this political ideology for me, it's a lived experience. But yeah. Let me tell you what it looks like where I work. So I work for a company that serves DEI, and it's amazing. I work with employers. I work with coworkers who are Muslim, Hindu. They look different than me. They come from different backgrounds. I love it. But one of the things that I was able to do is I reached out a while back to someone. And I said, hey, you know, what would it look like for me to come in and do a training session on how do we work with people with disabilities when we meet with them? And they loved it. Like, and so I've been able to do that and kind of help people understand, you know, what the medical model of disability looks like in the social model. And it's just been great to be able to kind of help them recognize their own biases. So programs like that exist because the company I work for values DEI.
We'll be right back.
I'm no tech genius, but I knew if I wanted my business to crush it, I needed a website now. Thankfully, Bluehost made it easy. I customized, optimized, and monetized everything exactly how I wanted with AI. In minutes, my site was up. I couldn't believe it. The search engine tools even helped me get more site visitors. Whatever your passion project is, you can set it up with Bluehost. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, what do you got to lose? Head to Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com to start now.
Let's get back to the show.
I'll just say, anecdotally, and Christy, I don't know if you can speak to this as well. I grew up going to a parochial school, so a religious Catholic school that was fairly small, fairly homogeneous. And then I went to a parochial high school that, again, was fairly small, fairly homogeneous. And my kids go to a giant public school system. My son's high school has 3,500 kids. My daughter's junior high has 700 kids. And I had a little bit of concern, right? Like, will they get lost in how big this place is, you know? And what I've noticed and what I've found is that one of the benefits of being in a large public school for my kids is that they are exposed to a lot of difference. A lot. And it's not all positive for them, right? So we have conversations at dinner where I have to gently and wisely navigate like pejorative comments about difference, you know? But in general, it's extremely positive for them. Like, I think I was in my 20s before I met somebody who was Muslim or Hindi, you know? I was in high school, outside of my high school, before I met a gay person, only because I did theater, you know? And so there is, I think, a benefit to my kids for being in environments where people aren't all like them. And I wonder, I don't know, some people see that as a threat, I think, right? I don't know.
You know what that makes me think of? I not too long ago was out to coffee with a friend of mine who has graduated from high school. She was used to be in the youth group, but now she's graduated, and she has some disabilities. And we were sitting at Starbucks, and this woman came in who was in a wheelchair, and she was like kind of sitting behind us, and she was like kind of really close to us and could kind of hear our entire conversation. Eventually turned around and was like, do you guys love God? And so it sparked this conversation. And my friend who was sitting next to me right away said, yeah, we love God. And she said, tell me about your disability. And internally I was like, no, you don't ask that. I don't think that that's appropriate. And yet it brought about this conversation because my friend said, I want to hear about your disability, but let me just tell you, I have some disabilities. And she the first truth she told was a truth about herself, and she shared about hers. And it sparked this beautiful conversation that I sat there and was like, I think for me, there was this big kairos of, I don't want to talk about something that would be different from somebody else. There's like safety in what is the same sometimes in our society. And I was so challenged by these two women who were so free to talk about the differences in their bodies and in their minds and in their emotions. And I try to hide that stuff. And I guess what I'm saying is we need each other to learn. And I need to not think I need to hide things that are not the same about other people.
You know, Christy, it's our relationships that change us. When I think back on the relationships I built with my LGBTQ plus friends, those are relationships that destroyed any theological views I had on being anti-gay. Because what I believed and what I experienced were two different things. And if we can have those relationships with people that are different than we are, and most people, now that it does take gentleness, because a lot, sometimes people don't want to talk about the stuff they've gone through, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But most people are open. So if you have that Muslim coworker, ask questions about their faith. They like that. You know, say, hey, tell me about Ramadan. Tell me about Eid. Tell me about what your experience has been like. They will normally love to have that conversation with you because they're curious. If you come at it from a level of curiosity, most people are very open to those conversations. And I think once we do that, if we can do that more, it would change the way we view society. Living in Metro Detroit, we have a large Arab population. So every day I see women wearing hijabs. And so it doesn't faze me. And what I mean by that is it doesn't make me uncomfortable. But for someone who was raised in the South, it might make you feel threatened. But once you have those conversations with people, once you embrace the differences, it really does, it destroys all those narratives that we've been taught.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like for me, I loved sharing my story. I loved telling people who I am. And mm-hmm. a lot of people don't ask, but I've always enjoyed sharing who I am because my life has always been an open door. Like I'm really not, like, when it comes to being a private person, I'll share what I've experienced. And like, if it helped you out in some way, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you spending time today, Will, sharing your story with us. I wonder if, as we close, if you could just tell us what you enjoy most about your job and doing social work. What brings you joy and fulfillment there?
Well, now, I think ironically, when the organization wouldn't hire me 20 years ago because I couldn't speak. Right, I'm a therapist now, so I speak all the time, all day long. And so, ironically enough, but and yeah, there's always that thought of, you know, if they can't understand you, but I give people permission to say, hey, if you need to ask you to repeat something, repeat it. And it doesn't bother me. What I love most about social work, what I do, is that I get to see on a daily basis people who are doing their very best to navigate the life they've been given. And they are resilient and they're beautiful people. And I tell them that, like, you are a beautiful person. Your story matters. You matter. Because to the outside society, these are all the people that don't matter. And what I love most about therapy is that in therapy, the most important part is having that relationship with the client. And I always tell my clients, this is a safe space for you. This is a safe space for you to be who you are. And I love seeing people awaken for the first time in many years discovering the true selves. Because so often, we live our whole lives for different people. We never live our lives for ourselves. And one of the most harmful things about that we're taught in evangelical space is that you can't trust yourself. You absolutely can't trust yourself. Mm. And like anything, there's a growing phase, but you can trust who you are. That's how you grow. So I love that I get to be with people who aren't always like me and learn from them. Yeah. And grow with them. And the diversity is beautiful. But I love about social work, it's one of our core values is upholding the dignity and worth of individuals. So that's my job every day is to help people uphold their dignity and say, you know what? You're going through so much right now, but you matter. You matter.
Well, Will, this is our, I mean, we exchange voice messages regularly through social media, and I got to know you a little bit through that, and just reading how you show up on social media, the kinds of things you care about, and even today in this conversation, it's clear that you have a gift for helping people own and appropriate and internalize that they matter. And I just want to affirm that's how I see you show up in the world. And I get that from you too. So thanks for being you. Thanks for coming on to a podcast to share a little bit about your experience having a disability in the church and in the professional world. It's been great to have you with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, guys.
Thanks. Our paths did cross right after we hit, like, end. Will and I did talk. Like, I actually did meet him when he was in South Carolina and was a secretary slash assistant for somebody that was pretty influential in his life. Anyway, crazy, crazy that our paths met before right now. But it's an important conversation to have. It actually makes me think of that book, Ableism Fuels Racism.
Yes, by Lamar.
And the hierarchy that often we put on people's bodies and disability versus what people would say is not non-disability, and how we put value on people, which is bananas and not of Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I was reminded in this conversation how often when I'm around bodies that aren't like mine, I feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Part of it is I don't want to do the wrong thing or say the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And part of it is I'm unaware of how environments cater to my body and are ordered and shaped and normed for my body. And the introduction of a different body introduces, complication there or feedback a bit. I don't know. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Can you put words to it better than I can?
Yeah. I feel like it requires more, right? It requires more of us, whether that be, we can't just sort of trust that, that this interaction will be, I'm struggling for words too, I guess. we can't just trust that this interaction will be sort of easy, that there has to be some sort of accommodation or effort that needs to be put in order to make space for or to understand or, that kind of a thing. I definitely feel the same thing.
Yeah.
I have a friend who has a prosthetic leg, and she, when I first met her, I felt like every interaction, this is just me trying to be really honest, every interaction, I couldn't not look at her leg. It was really hard for me to not, I was like, make eye contact, which was so weird. I was like, what is going on with me? Until finally I just was like, I'm so sorry. What does it look like to love you well and to not see you as somebody who is missing a leg? Because I feel like people treat her that way, Yeah. And she thankfully she's just so open. She's like, oh, you want to see it? I can take it off for you. You want to examine it? Would that help? I just appreciated her openness and to my that immaturity and needing somebody to help bring me along. And I don't know to what it looked like for that to not be something that I focused on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's something in that, Christy, and something in, something that you were sharing, Matt, during the interview about how we find it. I think we find it difficult to not make disability the only thing about the person, right? So they're defined by this one thing that's different than other people. But I think on the other side, one of the maybe knee-jerk responses to that is to pretend it doesn't exist.
Right.
Or to sort of erase it in a way. And I think there's the thing that we need to learn how to do is recognize it as a difference. Mm-hmm. Just inviting Will to share, what is your disability, or your friend, Christy, who, tell me about your disability, finding ways to recognize it as it's obviously it's different. And that's part of what needs to happen is a recognition of how, a disabled person is different, but then also the effort that it takes to not fetishize that, as you were talking about, Matt, and also not to just assume that they're going to be able to fit into the way that we normally do things. So there's accommodations that have to be made while we recognize the difference. But then by the same token, also then just involving them in the normal operation of things, even while we make accommodations. So it's not, it's not like every time, it's not like every conversation is about disability, right? It's like, no, like, let's do our life together. So anyway, I feel like that's just something that a lot of us are just not very well practiced at.
Right.
Yeah, that's it. It's reps, right? So like, if we're not around difference very often.
Yeah.
I think of, I don't know if this happens as much anymore, but when I was a kid, it was common for your parents to tell you not to stare.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like if you saw something different, mm-hmm. you would tend to stare at it as a kid.
Right.
You know? And I think don't stare is a part of like trying to not see somebody.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I think the impulse is good, right? Like don't
make them uncomfortable.
Yeah, that can be off-putting or uncomfortable to stare at somebody, right? But then we try to stay away from staring by not seeing.
Yeah.
Right.
I do notice, let me get this rambling thing to some kind of conclusion. I do notice though that if I'm around things more, I stare less.
Right.
There's no need to stare at something that's common.
Right.
And I think, you know, I mean, Will shared that there's like just a few thousand people with his disability in the world, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Some things are just uncommon.
Yeah.
But I've found the more I put my body in places where uncommon people or attributes mm-hmm. or ethnicities or disabilities exist, the less I tend to fetishize or have an aversion to uncommonness.
Yeah. 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 I think the thing I was thinking about is that sort of don't stare message, again, probably well-intentioned, you know, don't make people feel uncomfortable, also maybe carries, though, the implicit message that there's something shameful about the difference that you're noticing. Whereas I think, you know, a child is just noticing a difference, right? It's just like, oh, I've never seen that before. What's going on? Which I think there is some sort of healthiness in that curiosity. And so the command not to stare, I think it can have the unintended effect of creating a sense of shame around mm-hmm. disability or difference, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad Will came on.
Yeah, me too. That was great.
He's a sweet guy, and you know, it was his idea. So I appreciate that. I've got another author about disability justice that's in the pipeline. I've got a book that my friend recommended to me, and I want to work through it a bit, and then hopefully we can talk about this more. Mm-hmm. I think I'm just keenly aware that a lot of even our church, Ben, isn't accommodating or ordered or oriented necessarily for people with disabilities.
Right.
You know, I had somebody with a disability recently before they came to our church. They asked me, how will I be treated? And this person has a disability that is visually apparent, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, it was the same thing that I said to somebody who was a trans woman who asked me, how will I be treated there? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I can tell you the kinds of people that are at our church. Yeah. I have a good reason to believe that you'll be accepted and embraced. But you know, if you sit next to a new person who's got some aversion to your disability, I can't control that. You know, all of us have awful days where microaggressions come out. Maybe you'll experience that. Mm-hmm. But I think in general, I'm committed to normalizing talking about this. Because I just don't want, I don't want another Will Harrison who is so good at caring for people to spend a decade trying to find a job in a church and just not get one.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, well.
Okay. No joke. No joke.
It's just a PSA.
Nope. I know what's happening. News. Listen, no news.
No news. I want to hear, I want zero more facts in this podcast.
Okay, then Christy, earmuffs, because maybe some of our listeners need to know.
Okay, this is news for Ben.
Okay.
You don't ever give Ben news.
Oh,
Ben,
good point.
Ben, here's some news. Okay. I recently heard that the company that makes yardsticks won't be making them any longer.
There's only one company that makes yardsticks?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they're not going to make them anymore.
Nope.
Well, that's an interesting fact.
That's not what I said. Mm. They won't be making them any longer.
Oh, I see.
You see.
Because the distance of a yard has not changed.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. It's still 3 feet.
There was apparently some confusion about that out there.
Yeah.
Some things got said on Truth Social.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to clear up.
That's good.
That the yard will stay a yard.
Good. I'm not going to make them any longer.
All right. See, Christy? That wasn't so bad.
That was some, you know, I'm glad to hear that news, you know, that they're not messing with the distance, you know, that we measure football fields by and stuff like that. Like that feels important.
Be tragic for football.
I know. Yeah. How would we know if it was a touchdown without
without the yardsticks? How would they draw the line?
Right. That's what they do is they're like, well, we need some, and they have to do like 100 of them every single football field. They order 100 yardsticks and they stack them up and they draw the lines and then they ship them off to the next stadium that's being built. So,
anyway. All right, Christy, will you get us out of here?
Yeah.
Will said he likes when you say goodbye. Would you say goodbye?
Okay. Bye, friends. See ya.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect there with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith and spirituality and whatever else comes up. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. Finally, we would love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, you can go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the start recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.